starting my second interview in Quebec City, and I am sitting on September 1st, 2011, in the Canadian Grain Commission office beside the wonderful Bungie elevator here. So my narrator will introduce himself.
Hello, everybody. This is Patrick Channer speaking from Quebec City, born in Bécomo, but now living in Quebec for 8 years now.
Okay, great. Now, Bécomo is a place that I've heard of because there's an elevator there.
Yes.
Yes. And one of our prime ministers was from there as well. So
yes, Mr. Yes. Moroney.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, tell me how you first got involved in the grain industry.
Actually, I was studying in college, working a summer job at a garage, Hyundai garage. I was like, where the pieces, people couldn't see me just for selling pieces of cars. Like, and I met Mr. Bouillon there, but he saw me work at the curling club in Bécomo at the day. And when he saw me, he told me that there was openings to work for the government, to work at Cargill. Me personally, I didn't know nothing about Cargill. I didn't even know it was grain that was stored. Was storage there, so I applied for the job. So I got the job. I started working in 1997. I was 21 years old. I worked there for 7 years. So I was pretty young. So it was funny because I went to Bécomo only 2 weeks ago, and I met all the people that I worked with when I was really young. And it's strange to, because now I'm 36 years old. And It's kind of funny to see when you're really young and starting in life, and where I am now, and then you go back and meet the people who are very glad to meet me. And there was not a lot of workers left at Cargill that I worked with when I started there, but it was fun.
So when you started work, then were you working as an employee of Cargill?
No, I started for a CGC. When I applied for the job, I took all the tests. It took, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 months before starting hiring me. So, I just started for the CGC, only for the CGC.
Okay. So, I'm always quite amazed. I grew up in Thunder Bay, and if it weren't for the fact that my father worked as a grain inspector for the Canadian Grain Commission, I don't think I would even be aware of the elevators. Now, the elevators are not tiny, so you sort of wonder, and even in Bécomo, there's a big elevator there. What did you think was happening in that big elevator? Or did you even notice it was there?
Because if you look at the way Bécomo is, the town is made, actually, if you don't take the time to look, you won't really see the elevator, because it's kind of like in a corner, like in a bay in a corner, because there's a big, big company, aluminum company, just beside Cargill. Because Cargill is big, actually. It's the biggest stowage elevator in Canada, I think, if I'm not mistaken, with 4,091 tons of stowage of grain that could hold.
Do you know how that would compare with the Bungie elevator that I see out the window here?
Bungie, it's 200 something, 250, I think. I have the amount actually right here, 225,000 tons. Mm. So this is pretty big in Bécomo. The thing with Bécomo is they have two big sections. It's like a big arenas. It's very impressive to see when you go in, because they have big doors they open, and when you come in, when you go in, it's like big arena, and you have all the grain that they can hold there. I think it's about close to 100,000 tons only in those sections.
So they aren't bins then, they're more like warehouses.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They have big tanks, some bins, tanks, bins, and two sections. Because between the sections, they have bins.
So I'm going to ask you to think way back then to when you started with the Canadian Grain Commission, and did you go to Winnipeg for your training?
No, all my training, I did myself a lot. I asked a lot of questions to my supervisor. And back in the day, we didn't have computers to look up information. We had an old Apple we didn't have an internet for sure. So the learning I got was by asking a lot of questions. And some people actually from Winnipeg came to work in Baie-Comeau for, I think, a month or 2 months. Mr. Merle Pankowicz came to help me a lot for the training, for the grade, because like I said before, for me, I'm not a, like farmers are not known. And if you, when you tell people that you work for the commission, they never know what it is. And when they tell them you look at grain, they say, grain? There's no grain in Quebec. So, but there is grain in Quebec, but you know, they don't know they exist.
So, as a new person starting, what was your impression of elevators? What was your impression of the grain industry? What did you, what sort of surprised you most about what you were learning?
Actually, the thing that surprised me the most is that when I learned that, first of all, that Canadian grain is the best grain in all the world, pretty much. And the other thing that surprised me also is that we export, this is what we export the most in Canada, is grain. That actually surprised me when I learned that at the beginning. After that, I would have to say when people ask me questions about the grain business and how it works, the thing that surprised the most, I think, was... is that gonna bother you? No, okay. It's when they saw like payloaders going in the holds to unload the grain from the boats. That surprised them a lot. And other thing that surprised them also was when we told them that we put grain as food in the holds of the ships, because they say we eat that and they put that in the holds of ships, but. Yeah, that's how it works.
Where do the explain a little? Since you really are the first person that, well, and Stefan, that I've talked to about the Eastern system. Do you have any comments made about the from your perspective about the system as it works from the prairies to Thunder Bay? And then from Thunder Bay to here, how would you describe maybe the similarities and differences?
Well, the big difference is the boats, because in Thunder Bay they load the Lakers, that boats that are made to travel in the Great Lakes and in the rivers. And the difference from the boats here is that we load boats that are going cross seas. So they have to travel a lot more, and the cargo has to stay in the holds a lot longer than the Lakers. After that, we have the cars also that come from Thunder Bay that are that we don't see, like we don't inspect the grain that goes in cars and then leaves. So that's the big difference between Thunder Bay and here, but also that. Grain that leaves from Thunder Bay to come here is not usually they don't go directly to the buyer or the country or whatever. Usually it has to stop here, and then we load here from here to the country that bought the grain. So that's all one of the difference between the inspection mm-hmm. from Thunder Bay.
When you said that one of the differences is that the grain that gets shipped from Thunder Bay into Lakers. It doesn't have to be on the ship as long as when you ship out of here on mm-hmm. on a salty.
Usually.
So what difference does that make to your job?
There's no for the length of time it's the grain is in the hold. I think the biggest factor that you can consider for this is like if it rains. Because if it rains when it goes overseas, And the grain will have time to germinate, and depending on the weather also, if it's so hot over there, and so it's, if it's in the hole for a long time, it can have time to have a nice grass on the top of the hole.
Do you know where the grain goes from here?
Yeah, we always know where it goes, yeah, no problem.
So tell me a bit about the different countries that the grain that comes through
Algeria.
this port goes to.
Well, the countries usually that go, even I'm talking maybe Quebec, or you can have Quebec become more, but usually they go to pretty much the same places. Morocco, Netherlands, Egypt, Algeria, Italy, even Italy. That's another thing that surprised me also is that when I learned that the pasta that is made in Italy, the grain came from Canada. So that's kind of funny, also a funny fact that.
We ship it away just to buy it back.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so that's the most. That's pretty much all the countries. You have some also, and sometimes in. Africa, South Africa.
And you go from here to the Caribbean or South America?
Sometimes, yeah, but I can't remember like right away a place exactly. But it's not as often as the other places actually. But we do sometimes even ship. I think we did ship some in the States, even in the States. But usually the States they go by car. By truck or by train, usually for the States.
So the when we left your career last, you were just starting up at the Cargill. Was it always Cargill, that
Yep,
elevator?
always Cargill,
So they
and still
built it,
is.
and they built
Yep,
it.
that was what they told me actually when I was working in Baie-Comeau was Cargill. When Cargill started, they built the elevator in Baie-Comeau. That was a big job because the elevator is built in the hill. So when you go in the elevator, you have a downhill. So you have to go up the hill, and you're in the elevator, and you have like a slope. Because they thought in the day that with the slope, the grain would go faster on the conveyors. I don't know exactly why, but at the beginning, that's what they said. That Cargill, that when they built that in Baie-Comeau, that it was their little baby. That was their baby, and they were betting a lot of money in, I think, for the construction of that elevator in Baie-Comeau.
And then what happened to your career?
I studied a lot actually, because like I said before, I didn't have a lot of experience in grain, so I studied, I read books, looked at grain a lot. Finally, I did the test for to become a grain inspector. I passed, and when I passed, I had three choices. I could go in Montreal, Quebec, or Baie-Comeau. Since I like Baie-Comeau, but I wanted to try something else in my life. I was 28 years old, I think I was 28. I decided to go to Quebec because Quebec is a wonderful town, very beautiful, a lot of things to do, snowboard, golfing, and that's why I chose Quebec.
How would what's the difference between the Canadian Grain Commission operation in Montreal versus Quebec versus Baie-Comeau?
Well, Montreal, it's the main office, so all the information goes out from Montreal. It could be like inspection side, it could be weighing side. All our managers are big managers are in Montreal. For the difference, like if you'd only look at the loading of boats, it would pretty much be the same. The only big difference that I noticed from all the other ports in province of Quebec is the port wardens. Because if you look at the other ports beside Quebec, the port warden are people hired from the federal government, and in Quebec, it's the ports of Quebec that hired the guy that to inspect the holes. The big difference, the difference that this makes is that usually to pull wood in from Quebec are faster to finish boats, because they have to approve the loading of the grain in the hulls, and usually they're faster than the other port wardens. So usually when finished boats is faster in Quebec than other ports. That's how.
Why would that be? Any?
I don't know. I don't know exactly why. I don't know. Maybe it's because the port pays the salary of the guy that looks at the hulls, but that could be a factor. But
yeah.
They're still the same responsibility. But
so how much difference would that be? Like minutes, hours, days?
Usually it's hours, yeah. And other thing that difference also is every port you go, they say this is the place they load the fastest. But I would say that Port-Cartier loads very fast. Quebec and Montreal. But like I said before, the big difference between these three ports that's supposed to load very fast is when they finish. Usually the finishing of the hulls are much faster here than the other places. So that's why they average about 2,000 tons an hour. That's what, when you calculate about 2,000 tons an hour. And that's another difference between here in Thunder Bay also is the way of loading is very, it's much faster here than a couple of elevators in Thunder Bay.
What do you think makes the difference there? Is it equipment?
Probably the equipment. Because I don't know if they're older in Thunder Bay. You can tell me if they're older in Thunder Bay. But like for here, it's very important it be fast for loading, because faster it is, because we can load here. I think it's can load 3,000 tons in 45 minutes. We do that often. Same thing for Montreal. It can be even faster, 4,000 tons in 45 minutes. Usually the elevators in Thunder Bay, it's much longer than. That's one of the changes also that we had before, because in the past when I started working, we did increments every 2,800 tons, or every 4 hours.
What do you mean by increments?
I mean every 2,000 tons or 4 hours, we have to cut down the grain and go get a portion to work with. Where we go get the moisture, the dockage, roughage, and stuff like that. So that was the thing, is that in the old days, it used to be 2,800 tons or 4 hours, 4 hours of loading. So for here, usually it was, we always got 2,800 tons before the 4 hours. The reason why they put the 4 hours is in the western part, like in Thunder Bay, sometimes the loading took 4 hours to put 2,000 tons. That's not 2,800. So now they switch it back, and now they switched. I think it was even 5 years, 6 years ago. They switched to they canceled the 2,800 tons to 2,000 tons. Mm. So now it's 2,000 tons, but with no limit of time. So that's why they try to regulate that. That was another big thing that changes for us, because for us. It's a couple of minutes more if you wait to 2008, and so we have to do more sublots or increments or because of that downgrade of tonnage.
The which elevators then does this office handle?
Actually, it's we don't have elevators that are really because like I work in the elevator here in Quebec, but I can go work anywhere, so you know, you can call us to go anywhere. So we don't, you can't say, Patrick, you're going to be responsible of the elevator in Port-Cartier and become we have to, if they need somebody, I have to go every elevator.
So where have you gone?
But I'm based in
Quebec.
Quebec, yeah.
So where have you, which elevators have you gone to?
Actually, I worked in all the elevators on the St. Lawrence,
starting
from Port-Cartier, Baie-Comeau, Quebec, Trois-Rivières, Sorel, Montreal, Prescott is not in the province of Quebec, but we do cover Prescott. And I did work also in Halifax. Mm. So that's this eastern part, yeah. I had the chance to work, but usually, like if you if you're talking about Halifax, Halifax, we load usually, I think it's 5 boats a year, even maybe less than that.
Who owns the elevator in Halifax?
Good question. I don't know. I have to check that out.
Why, and maybe you can't answer this, why would someone ship out of Halifax?
Well, like, the grain business is always where the boats go. Eh? So if they have to send, like, a boat with, I don't know, it could be steel or coal or whatever, they sometimes try to book grain to, if it's going out to be sure that to be sure to pay less for traveling.
To have cargoes in both directions.
Yeah, exactly. So the boat, if the boat goes in full, it has to go out full also. Mm-hmm. So like the Weebird always try to put grain in a way that it goes out with the boat, the buyer or whatever. But there's not really, I don't think they prefer elevators from another one. You know, you try usually to give them a little bit of business so they can keep their certification for grain. Because you have to, maybe you probably have to export the grain from an elevator to keep, so they can keep their certificate for shipping grain.
Yeah, the Wheat Board tries to do that sort of in fairness to the farmers too, that you don't, you allow all the farmers to deliver who want to deliver.
But like in Sorel, the farmers deliver directly to the elevator. Halifax, I don't know if they have places to unload. Like I said, I've been there once, so, and I was pretty young, I was 23, so it's a little bit far away, but I can get some info about if the farmers unload, because I know there's a lot of farmers actually in New Brunswick. They even come to deliver grain here in Quebec, so, and the province of Quebec.
So what are the, coming out of the West, for example, canola and wheat would be major crops, and then others like flax and barley and so on would also come out of there. What's different here about the crops that are handled?
Well, it's a major difference. What we export the most from the eastern part on the St. Lawrence is mostly grain. If I talk about grain, I talk about Red Spring or Durham. We also export soybean from the east. Actually, grown in Quebec, the province of Quebec, we export soybeans and corn. Mostly, we do export. We do grow other things in the like canola. We grow it, but we don't export it from the ports.
I know very little about the eastern system. It's like the system ends in Thunder Bay, and that's why I'm really pleased to be able to speak to you today. Because you're working here for a Canadian Grain Commission whose head office is in Winnipeg,
yes.
Is there sort of a them and us kind of attitude at all? Like they know the Western system, but they really don't know the Eastern system. Is there any sense of that?
Well, actually, the manager, Mr. Stewart, worked for many years in this province, so he pretty much knows the how it works. For sure, it's the very difference. There's a difference between the work that they do in Winnipeg and the work that we do here. It's not the same thing at all, because we have to work with the industry directly. So we have to do the hours. We have to do pretty much what the company does as hours or work. So I think the biggest difference between the head office and the offices on the St. Lawrence is that we have to do the hours. We'd have to do much more hours than the central office.
And off hours, like depending on when the boats come in and they want to get them out.
Exactly, weekends, holidays, whatever. the other parts of the difference between, well, for sure, if you only in this province, if you talk about Montreal, talk about Quebec, you know, the information goes pretty easily. But when you talk about Baie-Comeau or Port-Cartier, I think it takes a little bit more time to reach actually Baie-Comeau and Port-Cartier. And I've lived that directly when I was living in Baie-Comeau. You know, yeah, you need material, you need information. It was much more complicated and longer to receive the information when I lived in Baie-Comeau than when I was working in Baie-Comeau, and the difference between working here also, because here the Montreal head office is closer, so I think it was easier to attract people from Montreal to come here down in Quebec and talk to us, and it was less complicated. And
have computers made a difference in that speed of communication? And
major difference, yeah, for sure, major difference, just with the pictures. When I was working in Baie-Comeau, if I wanted to see what ergot looks like, sclerotinia looks like, you know, stuff like that, I had to go to Montreal and ask to try to find a jar of ergot, sclerotinia, or whatever this fungus you can think about. So the big difference with the computers for people starting to work in the commission was the pictures, I think, and the information for sure, you know. The grain guide was directly in the computer, and if they had to do changes or amendment, it was instant. You know, it's instant compared to when I was in Baie-Comeau, they had to send it by post office, and then I had to get it to Baie-Comeau, and then I had to change it and in my book, and you know, it was for sure the information is much, much better.
Is Port-Cartier the furthest east?
Yep.
Elevator in Quebec.
Yes.
Okay. Who runs that?
It used to be Marc Larouche, but he retired, I think, 2 years ago. So now it's Karim Mmangi.
And which company?
That's Isil Port-Cartier. The name of the company is Isil Port-Cartier. And I think it's owned by European, if I'm not mistaken. But it's, yeah.
Is the Bungie elevator the largest, or the Cargill?
You mean with the tonnage?
Yeah.
The tonnage is Baie-Comeau.
The storage.
Yeah, storage is Baie-Comeau, for sure, far away. I think the next one is 296 tons, and that is Port-Cartier.
Montreal have only one elevator?
261, yeah. They used to have a lot of elevators. I think they had up to five elevators actually in Montreal, but they closed them down, and now they use them for opera singing, actually, because the sound in the bins is very good.
Yes, I know. I have on the computer. I got onto Xylophone, which is the one out of the elevator on right at the walkway, okay. In Montreal.
And actually, Montreal just got sold. Because the elevator, because it used to be owned by the Port of Montreal, and they sold it to Viterra.
To who?
Viterra.
Oh, okay.
Viterra, yeah. Now it's they own the company now for not even a year now, I think. It's so it's going to be big changes also for CGC.
Is one elevator pretty much like another, or are there differences in reputation?
That's a pretty good question. For sure, they have reputations, and I think the wheat board, what I was told from the wheat board, is you have to be very nice with them, because sometimes they can choose the elevators they want to put their grain, so that's why they were apparently sensitive, so that's why I think mostly elevators are very nice when they have to speak to them. reputations, I know for sure, like Cargill, I didn't know these facts when I started also, is that Cargill is very big. If you look at the processed food, meat, they're in everything, you know, like in grain, they have their fields, they have their cows, they have everything. If Cargill was shut down, I heard that we would miss food for a couple of months, I think, if they would stop producing. For Bunge, I know it's pretty big also. Same thing for GRI, that's Sorrel. So they're pretty big companies, actually. And grain, people will always have to eat. So that's why I think for sure this is like a promising companies. They're not, they won't close down soon because of the production of food.
So you started out in Baie-Comeau and knowing something about car parts, but not much about the grain industry in Canada.
Exactly.
So from that perspective then, what are your thoughts about the grain industry in Canada? What do you know now that you didn't know then?
Yeah, like I said before, I did work for the car parts, but I was studying to administration. So that's was kind of awkward to say when you're studying administration and you're going in the grain business. They didn't understand, but in administration, I think that was the big part. Is like I said before, is the export of the grain. For the grain business in Canada, I think if you travel a bit, like I went to Vancouver, I went and I did see the elevators. There's a lot of elevators also in Vancouver. I didn't see the elevators in Thunder Bay though. I think it's great. It's a big part of our history of Canada, actually. It's and I can only have big, very much respect for the farmers that grow the grain because I know it's a hard work and sometimes it's very discouraging. They have trouble with the weather and stuff like that, so they have a lot of things to juggle with for the farmers. So that's why my job is to protect them, to help them to so they don't have any trouble with their grain and try to give them the best grain I could give them, for sure. But it's very Canadians should be very proud actually of the grain business because like I said before, a lot of like in I don't know for the rest of Canada, but I know for the part of Canada, the part of Quebec, I try to say to people that grain is a big part of our heritage and a big part of our history also, and we should be very proud because, like I said, it's what we export the most, and it's what the best. It's the best, so we should be very proud of that.
One thing that I've noticed, and maybe you can comment on this, is I think I mentioned my father was a grain inspector in Thunder Bay. That was his career. And I knew nothing about the grain industry, even about what my dad did until after he died. I was really quite amazed at what goes into building a big industry like this.
Yeah, it's a lot of
Besides the people that grow it or the
Oh
people
yeah,
that ship it.
it's a lot of money for sure. Yeah, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of construction is very also complicated. If you walk around like in Baie-Comeau, it's like a maze with all the bins, and you have to know where you're going, and it's very dark, very moist. So it's yeah, it is a kind of impressive to see the construction when it goes up, and it's big, it's heavy also for sure.
Some people consider it a scary place, the elevators.
I actually I did tell myself that a couple of times. That would be a nice place to make horror movies, yeah, for sure. For sure, when you see the elevators, because when especially I did work shifts, night shifts, and when you walk around night shifts, you can hear things in the dark, and for sure, yeah, for sure, it's a kind of intimidating to walk around in the dark, and it's very silent, really quiet sometimes, very.
We before I forget, because you did some a little bit of research on the Bungie elevator that's here. Do you want to just have on tape some of the history of that particular elevator?
Yes, actually, I translated this. This is roughly translated from me to was a document that Bungie was nice enough to give me. So I just translated it because they didn't have it in English. A little bit of history of the grain elevator here in Quebec City. The grain terminal on Abraham Martin Street at the port of Quebec saw the day in 1904 as a woodshed. It's in 1913 with the growing demand of the grain market that the construction started. Built in concrete, the elevator was a very modern and efficient building with all the necessary equipment for loading boats, unloading linkers, and rail cars. The construction, with a 60-meter tower, 51 bins, and a total capacity of 8,000 tons, was inaugurated in 1914. Operated by the federal government and after several important additions in 1917, 1928, 1958, and 1964, Bungie took possession in May 1967. With Bungie in control of 604 bins and a total storage capacity of 225,000 tons, they rapidly prospered in the grain business in Quebec. Their location was a big part of their success, being the last elevator with the possibility of rail cars and connecting the Great Lakes with the rest of the world. The potential was limitless. I don't know if I should read that back and just...
No, that's good.
No, that's good.
Yes. So the federal government had it built.
Yep. Actually, it's still the government that rent the building to Bungie, actually.
Which department, do you know?
No, I don't know.
No?
No, good question. No,
yeah, if you could find that out for me, because it'd be good to interview them, and for no other reason, one of the things that we wanted to do was start to get a central location for all the information about the construction of the various elevators, so that, because as the elevators get demolished, sob, sometimes the history of them disappears too. They just toss out the paperwork.
Yeah.
So if I know which department is responsible for it, I can at least go and track down the information.
For sure, I could ask for the elevator. I can ask, yeah. Good, no problem.
Yeah. Okay, good.
No problem.
Describe a typical day on your job.
Okay, I start working at, usually it's 8 in the morning. Usually we had the day before, we know that the boat is coming and we're loading boats. We know like the quantity of grain they're going to put in the boat, the sort of grain they're going to put in the boat, destination, a shipper, buyer. We usually check the weather also before loading the boat. And after that, we're coming at 8 and we start loading. We always check the paperwork, if we have extra samples, stuff like that, paperwork. We always check if the paperwork is done just before the loading of the boat. We start loading, we wait till we check the grain to when we get 2,000 tons. The assistant will cut down the grain and will give me about approximately 1,000 grams of grain, of the grain we're shipping. Then I do all the tests. I pick the grain for a different kind of barley, whatever they ask for in the computer. And that's pretty much it. We check the grain, we wait to the 2,000 tons, and once we have the 2,000 tons, well, we do the pick for the percentage of shipping.
Is there anything that can go wrong there? Do you ever have to shut down loading?
Yeah, we have the responsibility of to make sure that the grain is shipped with the specs that it's supposed to make for different grades. So if you get a big off grade, if you get the problem, you can get the heated grain, you can get whatever. If it starts raining also, we can stop the loading. Tell the elevators to stop loading for rain, for problem with the tonnages, depending, going to whatever kind of percentage we can get over.
So what's the turnaround time then? So you when you say cut the shipment, that means to stop the grain from going in, then you do your sample. Okay, so what's the turnaround time before they start up again?
They don't stop.
They don't stop. So what if you find, when do you find a problem?
If we find a problem, we have to tell the elevator that we have a problem, and it could be going to unloading the hose if the problem is major. So usually when we tell the elevator, they don't wait, because that's if they wait, they take the chance and don't stop immediately. It's going to be longer to unload the hole. So that's a lot of money. We're talking about a lot of money for the company.
Mm-hmm. So what's the turnaround time then? So from the time you take your sample to the time you say to them, stop,
okay.
Or
like
you got
time,
a problem?
The time it takes to do an increment, it's around 45 minutes.
Okay.
But depending on the problem, we could even see the problem before an increment. So
it might be a visual thing.
Because, yeah, we get a sample every 45 seconds. Every 45 seconds, we get a sample in the office, a small quantity of, I think it's 300 grams of a sample going in the boat. So if we see immediately the problem, we're going to call them and tell them to stop. Because we don't tell them to stop. They decide to stop, but we tell them it would be better that they stop because there's a problem. We can see a problem right away. Because then usually elevators, they don't they don't wait. If they know the inspector, they won't stop the loading just for fun. So
no.
they'll stop the pretty like a if I say stop, it's gonna take maybe 10 minutes. They can stop the loading.
So at the same time as you're doing your samples here, the ones that are coming in every 45 seconds,
mm-hmm.
did you say?
Mm-hmm.
Is the company doing that same sampling?
They're starting actually the elevators to try to have house inspectors. Like for Quebec City, it's easy for them because they have a person working for Bungie that used to work for us. Used to be my co-worker. He's working now, I think it's been for 6 years for Bungie. So usually he trains the foremen to check the grain and what to check for, but they don't really have experience.
So that's not the usual process here, because my understanding of Thunder Bay is they have parallel systems in just about all the elevators.
They do have parallel systems, but to tell you that the foremen know what they're looking for, I would say I'm lying, because they pretty much don't know, so they depend a lot on us if they see problems to tell us.
I know it's difficult to give a sort of percentage, but what percentage of shipments would be problematic?
Well, we have lots of different percentages of problems. Also, we have a lot of different categories of problems.
Mm-hmm.
So if you would ask me what's the percentage of boats unloaded in for this elevator in a year, like say if
mm-hmm.
in a year, it's very minimum. Maybe, you know, it could go from one boat a year.
Out of how many? How many boats go through here?
I cannot say the number of boats. I cannot say the tonnage. Like
yeah.
We export 2 million 25,000 tons of grain
mm-hmm.
from this, like last year.
So
only that last year.
If you had like one boat out of 500, one boat out of 200, and I know it's very loose, I'm not saying you're
yeah.
gonna.
Well, if you calculate it, like it's if we exported 2 million tons, it's about 25,000 tons. We load about, the average is 25,000 tons. So that would be. 1,000 boats would be
mm-hmm.
approximately 1,000 boats. So on 1,000 boats, I would say maybe 2 boats a year.
Yeah.
But it could go it depends. Like I say, it depends. Sometimes they have grain with problems. They could go and you can unload maybe 5 boats. You know, depending.
Mm-hmm.
But the average is about 1 boat a year, I would say.
Yeah. What are you most proud of in the work you do?
Actually, I take pride every increment I pick, everything I pick, usually I try to pick my best, and I always try to do my work as best as I can. That's why I say people, sometimes the people say, well, why do you take the time to do that? Well, I said, I always say, you know, I'm paid to do it, and I take the time to do it. I'm not paid to do it fast. I'm paid to do it well. That's what I say.
And would you say then we'll get to this in a moment. I'll ask this question, although people oftentimes have draw a blank on having an answer. What would surprise people most about the work that you do?
Actually, when I explain a little bit, and when they see the work I do, is the patience I have. I think that's the most common comment I have, is that I'm very patient to do that, because, you know, when you do 16-hour shifts, when you do a lot of hours looking at grain, there's an expression in French that says veiller au grain, and that means it's a long process, you know, it's a long and you have to be patient and hard process to check that. But I think that's the most comments I have, is are you counting the grain? You know, they always think, well, I'm counting the grain, but I'm not counting the grain. I'm picking very specific factors in the sample I get, and looking at an overall view of the grain and how it looks like, the weather mm-hmm. stuff like that.
So how has your knowledge or abilities changed from the time you started to now? Like what used to be hard and is now easy?
For sure, like, it's the overall view of the grain, you know. When I worked as an assistant, I had to check every shot, every, you know, 300 grams I got in my pen, just to be sure we didn't have any problems. Now I think it's the experience I have, is how to deal with the problems more. When I started, I didn't really know how to deal with if I saw problems, but now I think it's a big difference, is I know how to deal with different kinds of problems.
So to find the problems a lot easier, and so you can move faster to correct them.
Yeah, it's a lot easier, and you know the process, you know like the steps to follow more, much easier. So that's mm-hmm. a big stress. Less, you know, if I have a problem, I have to call Montreal, speak with my manager, and you know, you have to be prepared, you have to know what to look for, you have to know what to do before calling him, just because, you know, we're talking about a lot of money, so, you know, a lot, because if you stop the loading, it's a lot of money also, so you have to be very serious, and when you find something, you have to be sure, 110% sure of what you're looking for, looking at, and because like I say, it's a lot of money.
Hmm. Do you find that some people are better at this than others?
Well, I think the thing you see the most is the experience, you know, the years. I think that's a big factor also, the years experience. That for sure you see the difference. You know, if you see an inspector that's been working for 3 years inspecting boats, you will see the difference between 10-15 years for sure. Yeah.
I think you've talked a bit about the interconnectedness between the Canadian Grain Commission and the producers, how you feel it's a very important part of getting them the best reputation for what they grow by doing your job well. Do you have anything more to say about your connectedness with the grain companies, the interconnectedness between you and the grain companies?
Well, I just wanted to say this comment because I just thought you just made me think about that, because I wanted to say before, but I didn't say it before. I think what I'm a little bit afraid of is with the commission, is because I'm very, like I say, I'm very proud of the grain we export, I'm very proud of the reputation we have for Canadians with that part. Because when you travel, go in other countries, you know, if people ask me the question, what are you most proud of, you know, from your country, actually? Well, for sure, because Canadians, we're not worried. I mean, we're not for the army. We don't have the army. We don't have, you know, the great power and the big brother, the small brother. We are the small brother of the Americans, you know. But I think we should talk about more how proud we should be of our grain and the reputation we have of having the good grain. And the thing I'm a little bit scared of is what I'm seeing, you know, like presently and maybe in the future, is that they're cutting down a little bit on the personnel, or you know, and the importance of inspection of grain. And I'm a little bit afraid that the CGC will start looking a little bit more like the Americans. The Americans, they do inspect the grain, but they're not, I don't think they're not as thorough as us. They don't, and I think I'm kind of scared that the government that is in place right now is going a little bit in that direction, you know, going in the American way of inspection. And that scares me a little bit for that part, because I don't want to lose our reputation for having the best grain in the world. But like I say, the government maybe will change in 5 to 6 years. I don't know.
What connection do you have, say on a day-to-day basis or a week-to-week basis, with the actual carriers, the rail companies or the shipping companies? Do you have, in your job, do you have any connection with those?
We started maybe, I think, 3 years ago, started to stop inspecting rail cars coming in to Bungie. So the connections I had with the rail cars are pretty much over. For the Lakers, actually, we don't even look at the grain that comes by Lakers. If they come by Lakers, the only reason why I would look at the grain is because of problems. Sometimes if they have a problem with the weather or whatever, there's a leak in the boat and it can affect the quality of the grain. That could happen, but it's a submitted sample, so we know it's the elevator's responsibility now.
So the elevator would call you in to have a look at it if they felt it necessary?
It did happen in the past, but what I was told is you can't do anything except if they bring it as a submitted sample. Mm. If they bring the grain as a submitted sample, I can check it, but I cannot go in the leaker and say, well, I cannot be the between man between the elevator and the leaker.
So it's very much moving towards inspection on export as opposed to anything that happens internally in the country.
That's a big thing also that changed actually in the last, I think it was 5 years, is the CGC is more and more concentrating on their mandate of exporting grain, certification of exporting grain. Because I know that in the West, in the prairies, they're having a lot of people getting laid off from that work for the commission, and I was told that the eastern part will not be affected with the big layoffs, because our mandate is still stand for inspecting exported grain.
Any connection that you see between the work you do and the Canadian Wheat Board?
Well, for me personally, what I can see is that the Wheat Board deals with the buyers, and I'm there to protect the Wheat Board, but also the buyer. That's the link I can see with the Wheat Board. Like the Wheat Board, they sell the grain and they pretty much own the grain that they ship from. Usually the shipper is all like the one that we're loading tomorrow actually is the wheat board that is shipping the grain. So for sure, if I have a sample problem, if you know, if they need samples, usually the demand comes from the wheat board. Sometimes from the buyer, but usually it's from the wheat board, and we do often need to do samples, more extra samples for the buyer or the wheat board.
This is a leading question, but does the work you do make the Canadian wheat board's job easier? Is it easier for them to sell grain because of some of the work you do?
I hope yes. That's the answer I can give you. I hope yes. I really sincerely hope that it helps them. But I think the buyers often don't know actually what we do as in the CGC, because I think I saw that many times. The hire companies, the buyers hire companies to get samples, but I'm not really sure that the buyers know that the sample is made by us. I don't know if the other companies that give the sample to the buyer say, "I made the sample." But that's the part I don't understand from the buyer's side, is why does the buyer ask other companies to get samples from us? Because we're the one that do the sample. That's kind of awkward.
Now, I have heard many times from various people that we've interviewed that certificate final is like gold.
Yeah, it is gold actually for the buyers, and that's very important also for the farmers and company, because that's their release. And once the certificate is made, the money goes out, you know? So that's why it's very important that it be very fast. That's why I was many times I was told, you know, you have to, you know, the buyer is waiting for certificates. They need that to unlock the money. So yeah, it's very important. It's very important.
Did that ever bother you? The sort of weight on your shoulders of signing off on that certificate final?
Usually it's a big, it's some weight on my shoulders, but I can deal with that with no problem, because I know that I'm pretty much, when I finish loading a boat, I know that what I loaded is what I got, you know. That's what they ordered, that's what they wanted, and that's what I inspected. And no, usually I don't stress. I don't even think, it's not in my mind, in my thoughts, when I load a boat about the certificate.
But if you were to say to someone else, and you know, I because you're deep in this now, and you think, well, that's just what I do, right? How much money, if you didn't do a good job, how much money is at stake? $10?
Like I say, for sure, sometimes I stress a little bit, you know, if I have problems with the boat, and they unload and stuff like that, you know, that's much more stressful, because you think a lot more, especially when you have problems, you think a lot more about the certificate, you know, because it's your reputation, you know, it's your reputation, and it's a very small family, the commission, and so that's why your reputation is very important. So yeah, that's, like I said, that's a big part of the way or the work we do.
Why you make the big bucks?
Yeah, but it is a lot of money actually, because if you think about only the grain part, when we load a boat, it could be like $2 million, you know, for a $20,000 boat. When you put on the grain, and it's $22 million of cargo that's in the boat. When if you have to calculate, you know, the dockage, they charge for docking the boat, they charge for standby, you know, you have to pay the people to load the boat, so the elevator has to pay the people, so that's a lot of money also, so that's a lot of money, a lot of lives, yeah, so it is a very big deal when you think about the quality and the certificate, the money, yeah, a lot of money.
A little bit more distant connection, but any comments that you make on your connection or the work that grain researchers do, grain seed developers, what kind of impact or connection is there between their job and your job?
Well, directly it's the extra samples. You know, I know the research part. They have more and more tests to do for actually that goes in the certificate, because buyers now are very they know what they want. They're very demanding on the results also for toxins. So now with the technology we have, it's easier and faster, but we still have to send the sample to Winnipeg. So
mm-hmm.
So that's also important that we have good relations with Canada Post.
Something that you said. So what are you testing for now different from what you tested for when you first started? Anything?
There's a lot more tests, actually, the difference between when I started. When I started, the samples were pretty much always the same for every boat. We didn't have a lot of extra samples. It was very constant. I think it's been maybe eight to nine years. We started having problem with ocotoxin, GMO grain.
What was the first one you mentioned?
Ocotoxin or ocratoxin. Ocratoxin.
Okay.
Yeah. That's.
I'll have you spell these out.
Okay. No problem.
Yeah.
Ocratoxin. That's what happened. A problem that happened in Italy, actually. There was a research person, I don't remember his name, that said that Canadian grain had ocotoxin. And that started a big snowball. And that's the toxins. We didn't have any of those toxins in Canada. And because of that person in Italy, now we have to do, like for the European countries, we have to do that test for every boat that shipped in those European countries.
Is that fusarium?
No, ocotoxin,
no, it's a different
one.
Okay.
Because now, like ocotoxin, that's one of the big factors, because you have to have one other person to load the boat because of that, because those tests, we have to take 2 kilo every 500 tons, and they test that 2 kilo of 500 tons, so that's a lot of work.
Just for ships going to Europe?
Usually, yeah. Usually it's Europe country, yeah.
European. So where did it come from? Was it always there and nobody found it, or it's something that's developed?
I think it's more probably, you have to ask the questions to the codes, not the codes, but the people that research the toxins.
Okay.
Because I cannot specify exactly, like I say, I know it's people from Italy, that they said that Canadian grain had that problem, and they went to court, and you know, they had the big problems with that, and he lost because it wasn't true. But we still have to do the test for ocotoxin, because now they're scared. Then there's the GMO, genetically modified organism. European, usually they're big on that also. They don't want GMO grain going in their country.
Yeah. So GMO, how what kind of test do you do for it? Is it visual?
No, GMO is the same thing. You have to do a chemical test. A couple of years ago, we did a lot of tests with soybean. Soybean, because we did have GMO soybean in Canada. I think if you had only one grain of soya bean that was GMO in 300 grams, you would find it would be affirmative for. Yeah, that was a lot of tests. And then we have the vomitoxin and the fusarium. Well, that's another test also. We have also the falling number that usually the buyers ask for. That's the paste that with the bending of the germination in the grain.
Have you said everything that you needed to say about major changes in your job from when you started to where you are now, given you haven't been here all that long compared to a lot of other people we've interviewed?
Like I said before, the major changes for sure was the computers.
Mm-hmm. All positive, would you say?
Yeah, the changes that were made, yeah. Well, except, like I said before, for the, you know, we did lose a little bit also in the services, because like we used to be like more wide in our services. Like we used to do hole inspections for the USDA. We used to work for the USDA, for the US government, for a couple of things, and now we don't know more, so that's a big changes for my job.
What would you do for USDA?
We did hole inspections.
Like the hold of the...
We inspect holes for insects. Oh. And we did inspect also for bugs, shipping. When we ship U.S. grain, we have to look for bugs for the U.S. part, for the Americans, in the name of the Americans.
But not now?
No, that's finished. Now the mandate for the CGC is only export.
Does anybody do the bug inspections?
Yeah. You mean for the Canadian grain?
Yeah.
We do test every 2,000 tons that for bugs that are shipped. Plus, there we have persons that do elevator inspections for sanitary reasons.
But as far as if a ship came in here with bugs in the hold, as long as you say that the grain is bug-free and the elevator storage is bug-free, whatever comes in the ship is somebody else's problem?
They did change that also, because usually we do tests every 2,000 tons, and now we have to wait at the end of the boat, because in Vancouver, the samples we send for bugs are in Vancouver, they're sent at the laboratory in Vancouver, but we did the test on in place, you know, on the spot. We did the test for burleys on the spot. We did find bugs, and then they had to fumigate the ship before leaving. But now we only check for bugs at the end of the boat. We're trying this. This is new this year. But when the boat leaves, if they have infestation, they have to fumigate when they arrive at destination. So that's less money for the elevators to spend. I think that was a big part of the reason why they want that that done that way now.
So let me get this right. If you're testing at the end of the shipment and you find bugs, the fumigation gets done at the other end?
Yeah.
Okay. If you test and you don't find bugs, but there are bugs at the other end?
Well, we did our part. I don't even know if the buyers looks for bugs when they unload.
Extra protein?
That's another part of the job where the sanitation of the burleys and insects.
Sanitation of the.
Oh, like I said, if you get a liquor here that they know is infested, that's the elevator's job to contact a person in Montreal. Not the bug man, but
yeah, the Department of Agriculture.
No, it's he works with us.
Oh, he does. He okay.
Yeah, he works for the CGC.
Okay,
he's the
entomologist.
Entomologist, yeah. Entomologist. We have an entomologist in Montreal that has to get the paperwork because the company cannot receive grain infested without treating it. They have to. By the law, they are obligated to treat the grain for infestation with phostoxin or whatever.
Yeah. If the boat is infested.
If the liquor is infested.
Yeah.
That's another, I could say. If the liquor is infested, they unload the boat. But the elevator knows that it's infested. So they have to take procedures to make sure that the infestation doesn't, you know, spread. So they have to fumigate.
Yeah. So if you get an empty boat coming in here and it's infested, you wouldn't necessarily know about it. Do you do an inspection of the hold?
No, that's the another government. That's
okay.
The agriculture.
Okay.
Yeah, they do the inspection of the holds.
Would they be routinely inspected?
All the boats have to be inspected.
Okay.
They have to, when I come work in the morning, I have to have, before starting shipping, I have to have the pass of all the holds. that is mentioned that there's no infestation in the homes.
Good. We're just at 12:05 and I'm coming near the end. Are people wanting to get in here to eat?
Yeah.
Let's put it on pause.